Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Two down, two to go. Welcome in to Sports Talk here on WWL, AMFM, and.com. Mark Menard resumes his post at Master Control after Ian Hoke for the first 2 hours. Good to have you back here, Mark.
Thank you.
Corey on the North Shore. What's going on, Corey? You're on WWL. Hey, Corey.
Not a whole lot, Christian. How's it going there in the studio?
Good, man. Thanks.
I just wanted to call and, first of all, say, I want to have something be made about the guys who wait on hold. The guy earlier, and this is just a bit of levity, but the guy earlier, who waited for the commercial break, he was talking about, the voodoo stuff and all that. The Saints will never win. I think that's hilarious. And if you live in New Orleans long enough, you're going to realize how awesome the culture is and how much, perspective you can get. I was just wondering, Christian, thank you for your service, by the way. Were you at Parris Island or Coronado?
I'm a PI guy, man.
You're a PI. Okay. Well, thank you for your service. Well, I wanted to ask what you thought about the Marshawn Lattimore. I mean, do you really think he's worth the cap space? And also, what does he really produce? I honestly was a big Marshawn Lattimore fan. Just to preface, I know it's a little too late for that, but I was there with my brother who was on leave from his second tour of duty in Afghanistan when we had the Atlanta game, and to see my main man with that long hair block that punt, it was one of the coolest things to ever see Steve Gleason accomplish that. But anyway, I don't want to be long-winded. What do you think about Marshawn Lattimore? Do you think we need to go with our organics, stick with what we have, just develop those guys, or, hold on to a guy like Sean? Well, Lattimore, he just doesn't seem to have...
Corey, you want me to answer the question, man, or not?
Sorry, but...
That's okay.
He just doesn't seem to have the hands that you want in a top-notch corner. He just doesn't seem to have the hands.
Okay, Corey, here's the thing. I would disagree about the hands. He has good ball skills. Here's what I would tell you. It's not so necessarily so much about his cap number this year. It's about, are you going to pay him? And if you're not, now is the time to deal him, because you don't take a cap hit and you free up $10 million. And you can get something back in return for him. You might not get a first-round pick for him. You could probably get a 2, certainly a 3 for Marshawn Lattimore. So if he's not in your plans in the future, then why not move him now? Why not? You got to be thinking about.
I'm asking you because you're the man. And by the way, Christian, you are living the dream, my friend. Went from a jarhead to an analyst for in my opinion, the best sports broadcasting team in the history. I mean, when you got Deuce, you got Streif, you and Bobby, guys, top notch, man. I mean, I am biased and definitely not impartial, but you guys rock.
Corey, thanks for the kind words, man. And no, I'm telling you, it's for me. It's about
I like Lattimore, but he seems like a decent fellow. I know he had one burst off on the sideline, but that stuff happens. You know, people judge things too harshly.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that kind of stuff, to be honest with you. That's just good competitive nature. Corey, I said it's not necessarily about the cap hit this year, but if you're going to pay him next year going forward, is he a part of your plans in the long term for the Saints, then you don't move him. But if he's not a part of your plans in the future, now is the time. This is the year to move him. Corey, thanks for the phone call. Jake Madison, Locked On Pelicans podcast is next here on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, Mark Menard at Master Control, taking your calls at 504-260-1870. I'm Christian Garrick. Going to kind of make this a little bit of a Pelicans hour, if you will. We'll go ahead and bring in Mark, our Pelicans guy, and talk me off the ledge here, because I watched the game last night. I haven't watched all of them. We know that. I watched it last night. It was incredibly frustrated by it. The first half was really sharp. I liked it. All right, they looked good. Zion scored 36 points total. They blew a 10-point halftime lead. And I know Damian Lillard's a dude. I get it. All right, he poured in 43 points. But where is the defense? And why does this happen where they blow leads late in games? What's the reason? And why should I not be frustrated?
It's okay to be frustrated. I think that, look, not all losses are created equally. And if you're going to lose, like getting blown out by the Pistons is not the same as losing by two to the Trailblazers. So you could look at it as a little bit of an improvement, even though it was still an L. You can also look at it as this is a team that's had Portland's number over the years, and the Trailblazers are eventually going to get one back at some point because they're too good not to.
Yeah, but these rosters were totally different than a couple of years ago.
Well, no, but they swept them last season in the regular season. They won all four games. So to me, the one thing that sticks out is that, you know, you got your final possession, you're down by two, you're in it, you've got a chance to either force overtime or win it with a three, and that last possession, Zion doesn't touch the ball a single time. That's what gets me. I think those are the moments.
And what did Portland do? Damian Lillard.
Right. Yeah, you got to go through your dude. And look, I know Brandon Ingram took the last shot, and he's a guy that you don't mind taking the last shot, but that ball has to go through Zion Williamson at some point. Even if he's not the one taking the shot, he's got to at least draw the defense in, and then you kick it out and get a better look, quite frankly. So, you know, I think that, to me, those are the moments they have to improve on. And
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
One of the positives I would take out of it, and what I'm seeing, and I saw this a little bit this year when I have watched some games. I know when Zion goes to the rack, dude's clear.
Like, yeah,
they don't want no part of it.
And he almost every time he finishes, or he gets the offensive rebound himself and finishes that one. Like his field goal percentage is off the charts.
Yeah,
he's making like 60% of his shots, and that's unheard of.
Yeah, that, I guess that's what's frustrating is because you watch a superstar in the making like Zion turn in a night that was very, very good, very impressive, and the team loses. It's just you see that and you go, man, why? Why can't this team with that guy, why can't they play better?
And you just feel like, you know, he can gig it anytime he wants it. When do you most want it? You want it on the last possession when you're trying to win the game.
Yeah.
So you've got to get him a touch in that situation, unless you've got some wide open three that you can bury, and you know the you got four guys collapsed on Zion because they're all worried about him, and then you get a wide open look that way. That's the only way that I see where you don't put that ball in his hands at some point.
Yeah,
it's frustrating. Like, I'm with you. It's frustrating.
I mean, once again, Damian Lillard, we know about his accomplishments. Right, he didn't just show up yesterday. Okay,
no, he's the dude.
He's the dude. But I don't know. Even with 43 points, if you think about it, he probably left some on the court. And who else should you focus on stopping on Portland other than Damian Lillard? And the defense is just not up to par. And Coach Van Gundy's a defensive guy. It would be like Sean Payton's offense stinking, and he's an offensive-oriented coach.
Right. No, it's extremely frustrating for sure, and I'm with you. But I will say, if you're looking for a reason to be hopeful, not all losses are built the same, and it's true in every sport. And the fact that, you know, you lost to a playoff bound Portland team by two, as opposed to, you know, getting blown out by a terrible Detroit team on the road. That's an improvement of sorts. And look, the Pelicans have played better at home. They've got three more home games in a row coming up, and you know, we'll see what they do in those and if they can get a little something going, because they're coming off of a blowout win in Memphis and you know, a two-point loss to Portland. If they can get something going in the next three games, then it gives you a little bit more reason to be hopeful.
So you're saying there's a chance?
Look, we're not even halfway through the season. There's definitely a chance, but they, you know, you're right. They've got to get it going soon.
Suns on Friday, Suns tomorrow night.
And they blew out the Suns last time they played them.
Is it matchups? They just don't match up well against certain teams?
I think that's the case with Utah. I think that that's why they lose every time they play the Jazz. As far as the other teams, it would be minute matchup differences, but I think certainly, you know, when they lost that back-to-back in Utah, I wasn't expecting wins in either of those games, because that's definitely a matchup problem for the Pelicans. They haven't beaten the Jazz consistently in years. But in terms of Portland was a matchup problem in the Pelicans' favor the last few years, and the fact that the Trailblazers got that win last night in the Pelicans' house, that's a little bit disconcerting.
Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Where do you stand, Pelicans fans? We asked you the other day, are you checked in or checked out? At what level is your frustration? Is it 5, 10? Are you staying patient and hoping and waiting to see if this team can turn the corner? 504-260-1870. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll get Jake in. Jake Madison, Locked On Pelicans podcast, Nola Jake on Twitter. This is Sports Talk on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, right to the West Bank, we find Jay. What's going on, Jay? You're on WWL.
What's going on, guys? How y'all doing?
Good, man. Thank you.
Frustrating loss last night. And that's not the first one. But I am hopeful for the Pelicans moving forward. I think we got a good young core of guys. I think we just need more flight time. We just need more experience. And you know that there's been the trade rumors flying about, and I think we could benefit from having someone who's been in the league for a long time. But I think at the end of the day, they just need more close games like that. You can't expect to give up a 10-point lead in the third and come down to the end with Dame, who's been doing his thing for long enough, and expect to get a W.
Jay, I'm with you, but I'm just tired of hearing we're young. I'm tired of hearing that. It gets old because they're young, but that doesn't mean you can't play defense. That's the
part I'm with you.
Me.
Yeah, I mean, giving up 10-point leads in the third quarter, that's not going to do it. I hope they're moving in the right direction, so we'll see. I'm optimistic.
Jay, thanks for the phone call.
All right, guys.
All right, Jake Madison, Locked On Pelicans podcast, joining us now at Nola Jake on Twitter. JM, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Christian.
Have you ever been hit with the JM thing before?
Every now and then. I don't think you've said that to me on here. I like it. It sounds pretty good.
So tell me out here, Jake. And you and I have talked about this. You know my plight as far as what I always gripe about with the Pelicans, right? And when I go to tune in, and we've had conversations about this, that I'm a casual NBA fan. I'll admit that. I have no problem admitting it. And in particular, an apathetic Pelicans fan, because if I do get jazzed about them, they go on a skid. Last night, it wasn't about any kind of winning streak or anything like that, so I watched the game. And I can't for the life of me figure out why Zion Williamson didn't have the ball in his hand to take the last shot when you're down by two.
Certainly, there were a couple of things to end the game that were pretty frustrating, and they kind of are repeats of things we've seen to start the year, too. First and foremost, even before that final play, Zion didn't check into the game until about 3.5 minutes left to go. They tried to sub him in right around 4.5 minutes or so, but because there wasn't a stoppage in play, they couldn't get him in the game and eventually had to take a timeout. You either need to take that timeout earlier because they had multiple and burning one there wasn't the biggest deal, or you need to try and sub Zion in before the 5-minute mark that gives them time for a stoppage in play to naturally occur if they want to save that timeout. That's an egregious mistake, and we saw it against the Indiana Pacers in a home game where they didn't start Zion in overtime and couldn't get him into the game until about a minute left in overtime. That's kind of unacceptable and a repeat of a mistake we saw early on in the year and something I was pretty disappointed to see in the team last night. In terms of the final play, you know, with how the play went and the defense that Portland threw at New Orleans, I'm not upset they didn't get him the ball based on what they had drawn up. The defense from Portland was pretty good. There wasn't really an opportunity for a pass to get Zion the ball, and it ended up being that the Pelicans took two bad shots. So while I'm not upset with the play call they drew up, they didn't get Zion the ball, it means you need to draw up a different play to make sure that you get Zion the ball. Either have him inbound the ball and give him the ball right back, or inbound it to him and not have him set a screen for Brandon Ingram. That's the bigger mistake. It was a bad play call at the end of the game, but good defense by Portland. You have to get Zion the ball. It's really that simple. Look at what he's been able to do over the past 10 games or so for New Orleans, where he's that point Zion, the point forward, where he's dishing out assists, the focal point of the offense, and completely bending defenses. To go the final play without him touching the ball at all, even to make things easier for the rest of his teammates, maybe he doesn't take the final shot. It's a big mistake, and it's very disappointing to see.
Jake Madison, Locked On Pelicans podcast, at Nola Jake on Twitter. Zion looks like he's, not slowly but surely, every night I think you see some steps that he's, you know, growing quickly. You agree?
Yeah, and they've really figured out a good way to use him, getting him the ball closer to the perimeter, further away from the basket, and let him just kind of create. He's such a focal point that defenses have to account for him at all times, even if he's far away. We've seen him score and have touch around the rim on driving layups. He can play with his back to the basket, and he's somewhat of a three-point threat. He hit a corner three in the game last night. You're seeing him grow offensively. You're seeing a bunch of different type of passes from him, too. He realizes he can make the bounce pass behind the back to get his teammates an easy layup. He can kick it out to the corner for Lonzo Ball to shoot the three or Josh Hart to shoot the three. All of that is growth from him, and I don't think he was capable of some of those passes to start the year. And to see him improve this rapidly throughout the season just shows you why he was the number one overall pick, why he's been the most hyped guy coming into the league since LeBron James. And I even like what you're kind of seeing from him on defense. You know, he's played 51 games, so not even a full season. Most guys are going to struggle at the NBA level playing defense, but he's improving just a little bit here and there on that side of the ball. And that bodes well for the type of player that he can become, the complete player he can become in the future.
Jake Madison, Locked On Pelicans podcast. You know what else I like about him, Jake, is, man, when he's in the paint or he goes to the rack, some of these guys make business decisions, and they don't want any part of it.
You don't want to be underneath there.
Yeah, I mean, it goes to show you how intimidating he is to, and he's, what, 19, 20 years old? These guys are grown men, and they don't want any part of it.
No, part of the reason is they realize they're not going to be able to stop him. You don't see him get his shot blocked at the rim. He's shorter than most other guys that are defending him, right? And he goes up so strong and with such touch and such kind of finesse to move around people, they don't even have a chance to try and defend him. They may as well not even try and risk fouling him and sending him to the line. And he went to the line 15 times in the game last night. He can kind of do it all, and you're seeing defenses respect him, and you're seeing guys get out of the way because they don't want to be that highlight play, because Zion is so popular around the league, it's going to get blasted out all over social media.
Has J.J. Redick been a find or a disappointment?
Mix of both. To start the year, his three-point shot wasn't falling, and you saw him get benched for a while just because he wasn't impacting games in positive ways. And to be perfectly honest, and he'd probably be the first to say this, he doesn't really, you know, make plays on the defensive side of the ball. But what you're seeing right now over the past 6, 7, 8 games with him is the two-man game with Zion Williamson, where Zion's the ball handler and J.J. Redick is the screener, so kind of an inversion of what you normally would see. When J.J. Redick sets that screen and then flares out for a pick-and-pop type of situation for a three-point shot, defenses have to react to that just because of the type of shooter historically that J.J. Redick has been, and it just frees up Zion. They've run that in games 5, 6, 7 times in a row, and defenses don't have a prayer of stopping it. Because of that, even if his shot's not falling, even if the defense from him isn't good, the way he unlocks Zion like that, and is a big reason why Zion is regularly putting up 30-plus points on, like, 17 shots right now and shooting 80% from the field, he's good. I can't complain about it when you're unlocking the team's best player like that.
I think Mark's got something for you. at Master Control? No,
I
thought you gave me the signal. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't. But I'm sure I can come up with something. So Jake, you know, we started this segment talking about, you know, fans, you know, talk fans off the ledge in terms of the, you know, frustration they might be feeling with this Pelicans team. Why should Pelicans fans feel hopeful about what they've got going on?
You know, I think, look, it's disappointing where their record is with some of the ways they've lost these games, blowing big leads in the third quarter, being unable to close in crunch time, or having a really disappointing final play like we saw last night. You know, living in those moments, you're not going to feel good about this team, but I've seen progress from them, and I think that's kind of the biggest thing. Unlocking Zion this way is point Zion bodes really well for the future if you put the right players around him. Defensively, he's improved, and I think that's a big thing because at times he has looked completely lost out there, but he doesn't look lost right now. So even if he's not a good defender, he's trending in the right direction. And so as you look long-term with this team, it might not be this season that they put it all together, but all of the pieces, the core pieces, really are there, and I think that's the biggest reason for optimism. Even rookie Kyra Lewis Jr. looks like he's going to fit in on this team and show signs of being a very good NBA player, maybe not all-star level, but a guy who's going to be a solid starter who can get to the rack and score and can dish it out. And he's one of the better perimeter defenders I think they have on the team. The way he navigates screens looks really good, which is the natural athleticism and speed that he has. So a lot of the pieces are there. And with an offseason that's not impacted by COVID, when you can actually practice during a season when you're not playing games basically every other day, where you don't have time to practice in between and to try and refine things and put in new defensive schemes, I think this is a team that could end up being really good. Just in this kind of weird season that we're going through, it's very tough for them. So if you're looking for silver linings, it's really there, and those are probably going to pay off in subsequent years.
If you're looking at this team, like the path forward for this team, which players do you feel like are part of the path forward, and which ones do you think are going to be cast aside eventually?
It's a good question because the Pelicans have to make a couple of decisions on those guys this coming off season. You know, Zion's obviously going to be there. They've committed a max deal to Brandon Ingram. He's going to be there. And I think Kyra Lewis Jr. is a guy that they'll definitely have in the starting lineup going forward. Honestly, that's probably it. Jackson Hayes has been disappointing. Nikhil Alexander-Walker has been hit or miss, didn't play in last night's game. But the bigger looming decisions you're going to have are a guy like Lonzo Ball and then Josh Hart. Both are going to be up for new contracts after this year. I don't really know about Lonzo Ball. When his three-point shot is falling, he's a fine player to have, but that's how he's going to impact you offensively. He's shown flashes of being a very good defender, but the past couple of games he's really struggled on that side. And if you're the Pelicans, are you going to be comfortable committing $18-plus million to him annually? I'm not sure that they are, and I lean towards not. Josh Hart's an interesting one, too. You know, two nights ago, he had six made threes. He was 0-for-4 against Portland, didn't really impact them in the positive way. But at the same time, he makes those hustle plays that are so important to winning. Can you come to the right number for him? If they do, I think they'll end up bringing him back, and I can see him being part of the future. I wouldn't be upset if they kept Billy Hernan Gomez, who's done a really good job in those backup center minutes right now. But everyone else, I think, is expendable for the right deal, the right price, or maybe you just don't want to overpay them, being that you're in a small market here and you don't have the luxury of big-name free agents wanting to come here, and you've got to approach team building a little bit differently. But the main core guys in Zion and Ingram, that's the most important thing, and at least that's in place going forward.
Jake Madison, Locked On Pelicans podcast, at Nola Jake on Twitter. Suns tomorrow night. What do you make of this matchup?
I'm a little worried. Devin Booker has been lighting it up. Chris Paul, even though we all thought he was washed up 2 years ago, very clearly is not washed up. And perimeter players have been able to kind of eat the Pelicans alive. You saw it with Damian Lillard. You've seen it a couple of other times, too, against the Pelicans as well. That's the big thing. If they can somehow limit both of them, which is easier said than done, I think they're going to have a chance. But right now, while this defense is just not playing well, I'm not bullish on their chances in this game, though I think the Celtics game on Sunday, given how poorly the Celtics are playing, how banged up their backcourt is, that's the one I think the Pelicans have the best chance of winning.
Jake, good stuff as always. Check out Locked On Pelicans podcast anywhere you get your podcast, at Nola Jake on Twitter as well. Thank you, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
You bet JM. Just came up with that one. I like it. I don't know. Jake says he likes it, so it'll continue. Mark, I listen to you and Jake, and I trust both of you. But I want you to understand where I'm coming from. And I think a lot of fans are in this category. We've seen this, and it's kind of just tiresome. And we feel like, hey, look, if they consistently put out a winner, that would bode well for their fan base. What I mean by that is they lose and gain him instead of
keeping
the fan base. You know, they'll check out if they're not that important. That's just New Orleans in general. And because generations haven't necessarily grown up with this organization and a successful organization at that, just like my kids, they think all the Saints have done ever is win, you know? So
right.
I think that's where I want to see this organization get to. I don't want them to – no, check that. I want them to win NBA titles. I don't expect them to win multiple ones back-to-back-to-back, stuff like that. But if they're consistently in the playoffs, I'd be okay with that. That'd be fun. 3 or 4 or 5 straight years in the postseason? Yeah, I think you would capture a fan base, a true fan base.
You know, you and I are around the same age. We were not around for the beginnings of the Saints and what they had to go through to make themselves into a winner. And that was, you know, over a decade of failure and on their part.
Longer than that.
Well, you know, from 67 to about, what, 83, 84?
87.
80, well, I mean, the first playoff berth, yeah. But they start to get a little bit better around, what, 86, 85?
Yeah, still.
But, you know, in terms of a consistent – and back then, the playoff field was much smaller in the NFL, too. It was a lot harder to get in. So, you know, to get to – I think they broke even for the first time in, like, 1980, like, first 8-8 season. But, you know, I don't know what it was like back then when they were trying to build a fan base and they were not a consistent winner. I do know football is, you know, more popular than basketball down here, and that's just a fact of life. But I think, you know, if the Pelicans can build this thing around Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson, then they will be a consistent playoff team once they get where they need to go. And the journey there is going to take a little bit of time. And, detailed this in the article I wrote a couple weeks ago. You take a look at Michael Jordan. His first winning season was his fourth year as a pro. You take a look at Steph Curry. His first winning season was his fourth year as a pro. So these consistent playoff teams and consistent winners take time to build, and it, you know, usually you start with a couple of pieces and you work your way up from there. And the good thing for the Pelicans is they have a couple of really good, solid key cornerstone pieces in Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram. And they're going to build around those guys, but it doesn't all happen in one offseason because, you know, the Pelicans are not a big free agent destination, and you've got guys, you know, I know you're tired of hearing that they're young, but Zion Williamson's only 20 years old, and, you know, he's going to take some more seasoning before he is, you know, the superstar you want him to be. He's already showing flashes, and his potential is immense. His ceiling is very high, and that's what you have to kind of hang your hat on right now is watching him develop and watching the journey.
That's going to be my approach, is he's worth watching in and of itself.
Right.
So I guess I'll take the losses with a grain of salt if I see Zion continue to make, I think, pretty big leaps in his game. He's already a problem. He's a problem in the NBA.
Look at it this way. The Pelicans are not on national TV as much as they are because they win. They're on national TV as much as they are because people want to see Zion Williamson, and for good reason.
Number one, Zion Williamson. He's a draw. I mean, look, I love watching him play. That's for sure. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. Where do you stand, Pelicans fans, with this organization? Are you remaining patient this season? Hopeful that it's going to turn into some positive dividends perhaps at the second half of the season or in the near future? 504-260-1870. This is Sports Talk here on WWL. Coming up next hour, Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist. LSU baseball opens the season Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We talked to Coach Paul Maneri earlier. If you missed that part, you want to hear it again, radio.com/rewind. But Jeff's going to preview a little LSU baseball ahead of their opener Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. 2 games against Air Force. Notre Dame is not coming this weekend. They're not going down to the box. COVID restrictions prevent them from doing so. So it'll be Air Force on Saturday, Air Force on Sunday, La Tech on Monday. We'll get Jeff's perspective as to where LSU, he thinks LSU will finish by season's end. They're ranked anywhere from 12, 14 in one poll. So basically in the top 15, anywhere from 12 to 15. Do you think they'll finish higher or lower than that? 504-260-1870. I mean, the SEC is the big daunting conference. They've got four in the top 10, four SEC teams in the top 10. I mean, it might be five. I'm going off memory here. Yeah, I think it is five. And if you go in the top 15, that would put six in the SEC. LSU was, by the media, projected to finish, I think, fourth in the SEC West alone. And I've said it before, and I really think that this year in particular, because of what happened last year with the pandemic, predicting teams and projecting teams and how they're going to do is even more difficult this year. It's always difficult, but even more so this year because of the unknown. They just don't know. I'm talking about the college baseball guys that cover it regularly. They'll admit it. Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball was on last week, 2 weeks ago. They just don't know exactly how some of those freshmen that were freshmen last year, still freshmen this year, are going to impact specific teams. Positively or negatively. They only got to play, what, I think 12 or 15 games last year? So they didn't even really get into SEC play before the pandemic cut their season. And that's where they're truly measured. That's where freshmen are truly measured. That's why they have some of these warm-up series. You know, you have Oral Roberts or whomever. It's helped them slowly acclimate to what you're going to see when you get into the SEC as a freshman. That's when you can get a better read on players as freshmen. They're expected to perform against Air Force, other academy, other schools outside of the SEC. But once they get in the SEC, that's the truth teller. It's where you kind of separate the men from the boys. So that's why it's difficult for anybody to necessarily get too jazzed up or too low on one in particular team, minus Florida, minus Vanderbilt, because they're veteran-laden teams. They got a ton of veterans and a few others in there, Ole Miss as well. Ole Miss has got a really good roster, very good roster. But you get outside the top 10, and there's a lot of unknowns. So the idea that, oh, LSU's ranked 12th, that's not good. Well, they might be ranked 12th, but end up finishing 8th. You finish a top 8 national seed, you're hosting a regional and super regional. Isn't that what it's all about? Isn't that the goal? I mean, not just Omaha in the College World Series, but the goal is to be at least a top 8 national seed. Give yourself a chance to go to Omaha and be one of those teams trying to win it all. And it's been a while. LSU hasn't won a national championship since 2009. And some fans, well, you'll see it this year too. There'll be a cry or a murmur, I should say, from a certain segment of the LSU fan base. I'll get Palmieri out. Time to go. Told you that 2 years ago. And the response to that is, hey, they're playing in the SEC. And college baseball has changed drastically, even since 2009. They've changed the bats. They've changed the balls. They've changed scholarship restrictions. All kinds of things that a lot of fans don't consider. Ideally, LSU baseball, you want them to win another national championship. They were in it a few years ago, lost to Florida. But if LSU is making a run to Omaha every 2 years, man, that's a successful program. There's a lot of other college baseball programs that would love to have that success. By the way, the box is 25% capacity. Usually can pack in about 10 grand in there. Not going to be the case, at least early on. Maybe, by the time you get to the SEC play, perhaps there's enough vaccinations going around, or enough have been vaccinated that you could safely have more than 25%. Maybe by the postseason, perhaps. Quite possibly the College World Series, if you go by President Biden's optimism, and he says that he feels like they're going to have everybody have enough vaccines to vaccinate every American by July. So the College World Series looks like they might have a full house. That would be great. That'd be awesome. That'd be perfect timing for a college baseball season that was cut short last year. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves. LSU starts with Air Force Saturday and Sunday. Monday against La Tech. Monday we will have the broadcast. It is going to air at 6 o'clock pregame, 6:30 first pitch. Watch the freshmen, though. Watch how they contribute. You know about the pitching. We've talked about that. They're loaded there. Not a concern. What would really be alarming, though, is if that pitching staff falters. They don't live up to the hype. And then you got the freshmen that are struggling to contribute. Then LSU could go into a real tailspin. I don't see that happening just because there's too much talent on that pitching staff, from the starters all the way down through the bullpen, middle relief guys. They've got, I said it before, they've got a lot of options on the hill, a lot. More than, they've got an embarrassment of riches. A lot of SEC teams would love the amount of arms, the depth that LSU has. Phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. A texter here says, I'll continue supporting the Pels. Are the games frustrating because we can't close out games? Yes. Yes, we're young, but we're talented. Number one scoring team and very entertaining to watch. Okay. I'll give you that. But for Van Gundy, he's a defensive guy. Where is the defense? Where is it? I mean, they're getting in 120 and above shootout kind of games seemingly every night. Now, I'd like to see an occasional 99-92 victory. That'd be cool. Or even if it's a, 110 to 102. Get that point differential up and get, 18 points below your average of what you're usually giving up. This is Sports Talk here on WWL.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.